This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, I'm Fiona Pepper, and this is Radio National Fictions. Today, more of our series, The Corona Tales, stories from under the cloud of COVID-19. Living through this pandemic, many of us are safely tucked away at home, trying to teach kids or be productive, or maybe just watching hours and hours of television, going out for our daily exercise but coming straight home. And we might complain about it, and we may even find ourselves desperate to get back to the office. But there are a lot of essential workers who don't have any choice but to be out in the world. They're heading off to work and inevitably exposing themselves and potentially their families to this virus. This next story is written by paramedic and filmmaker Benjamin Gilmore. Based in northern New South Wales, Benjamin is currently working on the front line, meanwhile weighing up all the risks associated with his work. This is D is for Danger.
Crew will be loaded with a patient with COVID precautions.
Receiving 193.
It's been 4 weeks since we picked up our first suspected case of COVID-19. As I usually do, I had some lounge music playing on the ambulance stereo, lightly Latin, I think. Makes the night shift feel more like an evening at a cocktail bar. But the mood changed quickly that night after we arrived at our patient's address. The man was in his late 60s, a former sailor with a missing leg.
ABC News with Rachel Hayter.
His coughing and spluttering drowned out the latest coronavirus news update on his television. Catherine McGann reports. We knew it was serious. Sailors don't often call ambulances, especially Moby Dick kind of sailors, unless they're really dying. What's a mere flu after wrestling whales, eh? Hearing the state of his lungs from the door, we returned to the ambulance and put on our personal protective equipment. It felt like a pivotal moment, one I wasn't too comfortable with. It reminded me of a TV series I'd been watching, Chernobyl, the story of a fireman who entered the Chernobyl nuclear reactor after it exploded. He didn't realise the extent of the danger, he didn't have enough gear and ended up dying. The thought was dramatic, I know, but I couldn't help thinking we two were a bit like him, canaries in a coal mine. Back in 2003, I did a CBR training course for chemical, biological and radioactive emergencies. It was all the rage for a paranoid world after 9/11. Learning about the effects of nerve agents on the human body was alarming. Stuck in my head to this day, the mnemonic sludge. Salivation, lacrimation, urination, defecation, gastric emptying, emesis. Basically leaking from every orifice. No wonder my classmates and I had second thoughts. We toyed with escape plans. We decided we'd secretly carry aloha shirts. You know, those Hawaiian shirts with palm trees and sunsets on them. We'd keep some in our ambulances just in case an incident like this actually happened, so we could put them on and walk away from the ambulance, just disappear into the crowd. We'd vanish for our own survival. It wasn't cowardly, it was just sensible. The first thing anyone in emergency care learns is D for danger. Remember Dr. ABC from your first aid course? Danger. Remove the danger or yourself from danger. To survive in the unpredictable world of stabbings, shootings, road accidents and drug and alcohol violence, our paramedics develop a nose for danger. Our instinct and priority is to shield ourselves from it first. Running into a burning building might seem heroic, but you can't help a soul when you're dead. So, yeah. The night when we saw our first three suspected COVID patients, there was the sailor, a retired fireman, and an elderly lady with pneumonia. And as we fastened the straps on each other's protective gowns. I thought of my Aloha shirt, and I wondered if this was the moment to put it on and vanish. If not now, then in a month or two when the country went the way of Italy. For a second, the idea made me smile. Of course, I knew it was a fantasy. Running away was never a serious option. It wasn't in my character. Instead, I would do what most paramedics were doing right now. Curse quietly, protect myself as best I could, and then go join the battle. Emergencies like car accidents and sporting injuries are down, thanks to people cocooned in isolation. So we respond along empty highways reclaimed by insects. Sometimes the moths are like snow in our headlights, peppering our windscreen so completely that we have to pull over. I've never seen this before. But anyone with a cough or cold has convinced themselves that they've got the virus. Some of them do. So any patient with a fever or respiratory distress is assumed to be COVID positive. When we arrive at a house, we don our masks and gloves, goggles and gowns. It takes time. The curtains of neighbouring houses twitch. Fearful eyes stare down, but we can't rush our work. There's a system we follow. The order of PPE application and removal, how we dispose of face shields and garments, the meticulous cleaning of ourselves and our vehicles. But no matter the care we take or how disciplined we are with wiping down, to some people out there, we're lepers. They give us the widest berth in the mall and cross the street to avoid coming near. Last week, a lady customer at an IGA called a paramedic friend of mine a spreader. And he wouldn't have been so offended had he not seen the same lady moments earlier squeezing avocados. What shameful hypocrisy. When my work partner says she's hungry and wants to stop by a Woolies in the ambulance, I offer to go in for her. I have my shirt, I tell her. My Aloha shirt. The last time I used my Aloha shirt to buy a bottle of wine, you know. But she's not convinced. Who wears Hawaiian shirts over blue uniform trousers with reflective stripes? She replies, shaking her head. No point going undercover unless you do it right. I beg to differ. A month on and my initial anxieties have begun to settle. It's an enormous relief the Australian coronavirus disaster hasn't materialised, at least not so far. I heard a man outside my coffee shop call it a fizzer. The sailor we picked up on our first night tested negative, as have most of those I've treated. So far, only one paramedic in the country has been infected. But the truth is, we've played our cards right and we're winning the game. We're reaping the benefits of social distancing and all the other sacrifices. Although it won't take much for things to go south if we get cocky about it. After work, I take my uniform off at the ambulance station and I leave my boots in my locker. My wife doesn't like me hugging the children or touching anything at all without a shower. Even then, when I try and kiss her on the lips, she turns her head and just gives me a cheek. Sorry, Corona, she says, cheerfully as she can. I wonder if she's been waiting for an excuse to avoid my kisses. It's a possibility. But if it's fear, I understand. Just as I'm protecting myself from patients, she's protecting herself from me. D for danger, I know. Maybe it'll end up being the lack of kisses rather than the coronavirus that compels me to don the Aloha shirt and walk off into the sunset.
That was D is for Danger, written by Benjamin Gilmore and read by Duncan Fellows.
This week in Coronatown, things that made me crazy. Everyone's talking about sourdough starters. Why does everyone have to make sourdough every time there's a global pandemic? What even is a sourdough starter? I asked my mother and she explained and I stopped listening. She said that the last global pandemic, no one made sourdough. And then I said that the reason no one made sourdough in the last global pandemic was because Instagram wasn't invented. Then we argued. My father. He says I should apologize to my mother. The guy in the flat above mine. He's making sourdough. I want to kill him. My father, he says I should take some of my mother's sourdough, if not to eat it, then to use as a doorstop. It's pretty dense.
That's the thing about COVID-19. It doesn't care about how rich you are, how famous you are, how funny you are, how smart you are.
From her giant rose petal-filled bathtub, Madonna tells her fans that coronavirus is the great equalizer. Anyone rich or poor can be infected. And of course she's right. But those differences in wealth and power and stature will make a difference. They always have. Sydney writer Mark Dappin is interested in outsiders, in the people he sees on the streets, the ones who don't fit in, who don't wear suits or drive fancy cars. He imagines life for a man collecting cans, watching the world change in the time of COVID-19. This is The Canner.
I collect cans. Not in the way a school kid collects stamps, if they still do that. More like how a banker collects money. Each empty can is worth 10 cents. Where I live, no one cares about that. How many people do you think would walk past a bin stuffed full with coins and think, I'll just leave all that dirty cash in there for the garbos to take away? Where I live, everyone but me. Especially these days when nobody wants to touch anything. I start my rounds in the early morning, pushing through the cigarette butts in the bins outside the shops, crunching between the coffee cups and egg trays. I'm hard to spot, perfectly camouflaged. I've got a face like a squash can. That's the joke. I'd like to see what you looked like if you had your head smashed in by a collapsing Derek. That's Derek the Crane, by the way, not Derek the Drunk. But I'm joking. I only wish good things for you. Christmases, weddings, birthday parties. Any time when you get through a lot of cans. Most people don't notice me, but I notice them. At dawn, when the sun rises through the clouds like hope over horror. I used to see boys dressed in Saturday shirts leaving houses that weren't their own, flushed with sated, shameful pride. It's never really sated though, is it? And it doesn't happen anymore. Since the virus, strangers have stopped making love. My neighbours are mostly executives, managers, lawyers and accountants living in sandstone cottages built for shipwrights and sea miners, painters and dockers. They drew wide circles around me as they hurried to the gyms in the breaking light to brace and stretch and lift, mimicking the dance steps of men like me who unloaded the heavy ships that once were moored in the bay. That was the first wave. The gym fools. And they're gone. Next to leave home with the private school children. Dressed for the English spring and the Australian summer. To wait blurry-eyed for private buses to taxi them across their private world. They vanished early on. Their schools began to close before the government schools. I miss them because they're young. Then the gym fools, now in suits, would climb into their cars to drive early to the office before the traffic jam on the bridge. My best weekday is Thursday, when they put out the recycling bins. Some people get angry when they see you taking things they're thrown away. There was a man who used to shimmy off his garbage like I was an old mangy dog. "It's private," he shouted, as if I counted every tinny of beer, which I do. He works from home now. I'm not sure what that means. After private school kids came the ordinary children, chasing their friends or hanging from their mother's hands like straps on a bus, as if that alone could keep them safe. By the time the women gathered for their morning coffees, I was on my way home, although I might stop to pick up a can lodged in the gutter. That's when I'd often find the strangest things. Condoms, sanitary items, underwear. You'd wonder how anybody could have dropped them. Of course, that all disappeared at the end of sex. Now, after a rainy night, there might be a sodden surgeon's mask stuck in the drain. I'd dry it out and leave it resting flat in case someone comes along who needs one. I try to be useful. Collecting cans is a way to make money, but it doesn't feel like a job. There are no jobs anymore for people like me. Not at my age, nor where I live. But I'll tell you this. A fortnight after everything changed, the garbos couldn't do their round because one of them had caught the virus. The bins choked and overflowed. The lawyers and accountants pushed meat, fat, and potato peel into their recycling bins and buried their cans in apple cores and rags. After the second week with no collection, people left stuffed garbage bags standing like snowmen in the sun. Bin birds worried at them, tore them open and scattered private things on the road for everyone to see. But when the marketing manager who lives in the Old Star Hotel fell ill, nothing happened at all. The estate agents don't come to work, but life is just the same. The HR people stay at home and the lights stay on. A dozen advertising executives aren't worth a single garbo. That's how it seems to me, anyway, with my head in a bin. I don't see the tight-fitting suits anymore, or the blue check shirts, no polished lace-up derby shoes, or dog's tongue ties. It's only tradesmen on the streets, in overalls and boots, on small sites and repairs, builders and carpenters, electricians and plumbers. Unshaven men stepping low and wide, cupping cigarettes, carrying boxes of tools. Some mornings, it's as if the docks have opened again, and the ghosts of the wharfies are tramping down to the waterside. I have to rub my eyes and swallow my heart to make the spirits disappear.
That was The Canner, written by Mark Dappin and read by Gig Clark. So I wonder, what's your work from home outfit like? I'll admit my own standards are slipping. Ugg boots and track pants are a bit of a staple at the moment. But I've heard that there are people who are still wearing their work clothes every day in an effort to make themselves feel like they're at the office. I can't understand it myself, and I reckon they probably still sneak in a bit of Netflix in the afternoon. This is Held Up by a Drawstring by Toby Feely.
Voice message received today at 4:32.
Hey, it's me, your old trackies. If you want to be all formal about it, I suppose you could call me your old tracksuit pants. But you don't have to be formal with me. You never have to be formal with me. Anyway, it's been a while. I just thought, you know, with all the madness at the moment, I'd check in to see how you're going. How are you holding up? I'm held up by a drawstring that you tie in a bow around your waist. It's been a tough time for the trouser community. With more and more people working from home, dress pants aren't getting out much. The sisterhood of the travelling pants isn't travelling anymore. Even skinny jeans are struggling. The last thing people want under lockdown is more restrictions of movement. I'm doing really well. I've just been hanging out mostly on the washing line, and things are really good for me right now. Oh, can you hang on? Hey, slippers. Wait up. I'll be 2 seconds. Yeah. Sorry. What was I saying? So I know we left things on a strange note with no like closure or anything, but I've been thinking about you. All this time with everyone staying at home, sitting on the couch, reminds me of the good times, our good times. Meanwhile, I see you every morning crawling out of bed for a day spent around the house and still, for some reason, climbing into your fancy pants. Fancy pants. But it's cool. I get it. You're working from home. You're dressing for success. But what about me? Like, what are we? Last time we had some proper time together was when you were home for a few days because of that cold. Well, now you're home for who knows how long because of a global pandemic. So, God, how do I say this without sounding weird? Look, I'm not trying to get into your pants or anything. I hate that pair of chinos. Sorry. I'm sorry. That wasn't fair to the chinos. I'm not jealous or anything. I have nothing against the chinos. What even are chinos? Are they like Italian or something? Anyway, yeah, okay. Here's the thing. Maybe with everything that's going on, we should think about picking things up again and, I don't know, making this you and me, you and your good old trusty tracky dacks, an exclusive thing. I know you used to be too embarrassed to take me to work. It's okay. I understand. I'm not appropriate for work. I'm too racy, too sexy, too leggy, right? It's totally okay, but now you're working from home with all this Zoom video stuff. I can tag along without distracting your colleagues. We could do tons of fun stuff together. We could go to gym. Oh, actually, wait, no, we can't. The gyms are closed, but we never did go to the gym, did we? It was always about the possibility of maybe going to the gym. So yeah, we can pretend that we're serious about thinking about going to the gym just like we used to. I shouldn't be petty and I don't want to air all your dirty laundry here, but you know pajama pants would just sleep with you and leave you in the morning. And you deserve more than that. On the other hand, leggings and jeggings and yoga pants can be a bit clingy. So there's always me. I'm not perfect. I've grown a little pilly over the years and my drawstring is starting to fray. I've still got that red wine stain on my left cuff. Oh, we had some times. But I'm comfortable, and I know you. Look, sometimes us pants can be too focused on getting you somewhere else. You're walking, running, strutting, strolling, but I don't think there's anywhere you need to be right now. Thing is, I don't think there's anywhere you need to be even if we weren't under lockdown. I think you're perfect the way you are. And let's be honest, you're not fooling anyone in those suit pants. You're not any more efficient when you wear them. And your boss doesn't care if you're in suit pants. He just wants you to wear some pants. Because the pantless Zoom meeting you tried last week, well, it didn't work, did it? That peppermint tea's pretty hot when you knock it over, isn't it? Yeah, I'm coming. Hold on. Sorry, I've got to run. Anyway, have a think about it. I'm not going to force you to make a decision. After all, you're the one who wears the pants in this house. So, if you want, give me a call.
To call back, press 2-2. To replay message, press 1. To reply, press 2. To send a copy, press 3. To delete, message deleted.
That was Held Up by a Drawstring, written by Toby Feely and read by Jake Feely. This week's episode of Corona Tales was produced by me and Sophie Townsend, with sound by Andre Shabanoff, Simon Branthwaite and Richard Gervin. Corona Town was read by Janet Anderson. And you can hear more of the series by subscribing to Radio National Fictions wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're enjoying the Corona Tales, please leave us a review because it really helps other listeners find us. Take care, wash your hands, and I'll catch you next week with more stories from under the COVID cloud. I'm Fiona Pepper, and you've been listening to Fictions.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.